This is Word of Mouth from New Hampshire Public Radio. I'm Virginia Prescott. With names like Viva La Waffle, Fork in the Road, and Truckin' Good Food, colorful food trucks have multiplied across American cities over the past decade, thanks in large part to the explosion of social media, which is rapidly changing the way that we buy, cook, learn about, and consume food. Baylin Linekin is the founder and executive director of Keep Food Legal. That's an advocacy group. He's also adjunct faculty member at American University, where he created and taught the course Foodways 2.0, Social Media, Food Trucks, and Underground Food. Baylin, great to speak with you.
Thanks very much for having me on.
I'm looking at figures here from 2009 that say annual revenue from food trucks is about $1.2 billion here in the U.S. Why do you think this trend has taken off so heartily?
Well, there certainly is sort of a hipness factor to it. It's new. It's different. A lot of these trucks are either sort of blending new foods, you know, they're making Korean tacos, you know, they're blending different cultures, or they're offering some sort of entirely new look at a particular food. So there's that, but as I attest in my class, the sort of the breakout of Twitter and social media has really made it easier for these trucks and their customers to meet up and certainly expanded both.
Give us a little more on how food truck operators use social media and how social media has provided access to markets that they couldn't have reached in the past.
Right. It's a great question because it's not immediately apparent what social media and food trucks have to do with each other, other than that lots of people know they're on Twitter. But DC, where I live, offers a great example. They had in place up until very recently, and that's been in the process of being repealed, something called the ice cream truck rule, which you and I and probably anyone, you know, over the age of three knows about, and maybe even younger. You know, you're at a park, you hear chimes, you look, there's an ice cream truck. It's sort of a Pavlovian response. You know, you give them your quarter and you get an ice cream sandwich in return. Food trucks of the sort that, you know, serve kimchi and, you know, other sort of non-ice cream foods, basically in D.C. had this difficulty where they were subject to this ice cream truck rule, so they couldn't pull over anywhere in the district to serve customers unless there was a line already.
Oh.
That makes it a little difficult because not many adults are going to sprint after a food truck, and frankly, it could, you know, be hazardous if they did. So they use Twitter. They say, you know, they tweet out in the morning at 11:45, we're going to be at Farragut Square. And they'll find that there's a line of customers waiting for them already.
Well, I guess a part of the appeal of a food truck is that it could travel into neighborhoods where there are food deserts or a lack of good food or access to good food. But I wonder if the money is more in these trendy sort of office areas or swelling around the metro stations. Do you think food trucks can play a role in kind of increasing what people talk about as food justice?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there are food trucks actually that deliver fresh produce. I think there's one in Boston. I think there's another one in Milwaukee that that don't bring cooked food to underserved areas, but that bring raw vegetables and fruits and other things. I think that food trucks can play a role. I think that often brick and mortar restaurants attempt to marginalize them by telling food truck owners, you know, we've got the busy sort of high revenue area covered. Why don't you go, you know, serve these underserved populations? And I think that's, you know, condescending and certainly a way of simply protecting their turf. But I think on sort of a voluntary basis, you know, food trucks can and do play a role in bringing all kinds of different foods to, you know, well-served and to underserved areas.
There are some other types of mobile food trends that food watchers are keeping an eye on. Underground and pop-up restaurants. Now, what are they and how are they connected to social media?
Yeah, they're both fascinating sort of different phenomena. The underground restaurant is a restaurant that essentially is not a restaurant, but is located most often in someone's home. They'll, you know, sell essentially meals out of their house, either to go or as part of a prearranged sit-down dinner. There are websites where you can go on to sort of learn and explore. There's a website called Feastly that's based in D.C., that arranges these or helps consumers and cooks meet up in the same way that Airbnb helps, you know, people looking for a bed find one in a neighboring city. So that's the underground restaurant scene. And as far as pop-ups, that's equally fascinating. And it involves, you might have a restaurant, say a Chinese restaurant is not open on Monday nights. You might then have a budding chef, a sous chef at a local Italian restaurant who wants to sort of, show off his or her flair. So they might rent out that space. And, that's all sort of above the board. But they're cooking an entirely different food, different chef, different place, and, inviting guests into that and charging usually a pretty penny. So it's, it's making good use of unused space.
You made the comparison to Airbnb, which now has run into trouble in New York City anyway, as illegal due to a lot of lobbying and pressure from the hotel and other tourism organizations there. And you mentioned the pop-ups as being above board. Now, I'm curious if the name of your group is Keep Food Legal. So where does this tie in together, your interest in food being kept legal? What does that mean exactly?
Keep Food Legal, our mission is to protect every American's right to grow, raise, produce, buy, sell, share, cook, eat, and drink the foods of their own choosing. So that includes brick and mortar restaurants, food trucks, underground restaurants, pop-up restaurants. The issues are pretty endless, and we make arguments in most of those cases. I think that the relationship between what I'm doing in the sort of academic sense with this Food Waste 2.0 class and what Keep Food Legal is doing is we're acknowledging that there is a huge segment of people who are interested in eating sort of outside of the mainstream, and that they have interests and rights that need to be protected and should be. And you'll find, as you alluded to with Airbnb, that regulators are often sort of chomping at their heels, typically in cases where no one's been harmed. And I think that that's where our advocacy can be most effective.
You're teaching students who are undergrads, I'm guessing, correct?
That's right.
So these kids, a lot of them have grown up, probably going to food trucks all their lives. I wonder how they're responding to the course. I mean, it seems relatively novel for a college course to me, but maybe not to them. How are they taking in the course?
I think they really enjoyed it. I think they got a lot out of it. And ultimately, the students had a semester assignment where they had to write a research paper that explored some topics related to the class. And we selected four of them for publication in an upcoming issue of Food and Culture, which is an online e-journal. One is sandwiches with a side of hashtags. And that looks at advocacy, mostly around school lunches and the USDA program. So it's really a rich blend of student work. I'm really proud of the students.
Bailyn Linnikin, advocate for food justice and founder of DC's Keep Food Legal. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
You can find out more about Bailyn Linnikin and the food truck trend at wordofmouthradio.org. Coming up, summer reading suggestions that won't fly away with the first good wind. A book critic makes a case for weightier beach reads, even the ones that make you cry. That's after the break, when Word of Mouth continues.